Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on the issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
Hello, this is Abe Thompson, podcasting to you from the SecureSet campus here in Colorado Springs. I'm the campus director, and I have the distinct privilege of being the guest host for Chris Gorog here on the New Cyber Frontier, the world's most popular cybersecurity podcast. Today's show is extra special. We have with us Mr. John Clay, who is the marketing manager at Trend Micro, a cybersecurity company that's just celebrated its 30th anniversary. I tell you, John, hearing any company in cybersecurity that's been going on for 30 years, that's something to be said for such a nascent and fairly new industry, quote unquote.
Yeah, thanks. We really are proud of our history of innovation that we've done over the 30 years, and I'm looking forward to talking with you today.
Excellent. So tell me, John, what was your path to end up in marketing, but specifically in marketing at a cybersecurity company?
Yeah, good question. I actually have a bachelor's degree in electrical engineering, and kind of funny, I never really got used my degree. I went into programming for a number of years, and then I started into as a sales engineer for some distributors. And then, lo and behold, about 21 years ago, I did an ad in the paper for a company called Trend Micro, and I started at Trend Micro as the second sales engineer in North America. And since then, I've held numerous roles inside Trend Micro, from sales engineering manager, education manager, and then I moved into marketing. I wanted to get onto a little more different side of the house, and I've been doing marketing for Trend Micro for many years. Throughout the whole time, I've always been a speaker. I've been, and today I do conferences all around the world talking about cybersecurity and the threats that are affecting them. I work very closely with our threat researchers inside Trend Micro. We have about 450 plus researchers inside Trend.
Wow.
And they look at different aspects of the threat landscape, and I work with them to help promote and publish their work and talk to the press, talk to audiences around the world about what's going on.
Well, certainly one of the common terms I've seen around our industry, especially for those who have the gift of speaking and communication, would be that of a cybersecurity evangelist. Is that something you'd allow that moniker to rest on your shoulders?
Yeah, definitely. I really am trying to build the awareness to people out there that cybersecurity is an issue, and people have to take notice of it. If you think about it today, business is cyber, and cyber is business.
Hear, hear.
So cyber now is very entrenched inside an organization, and all organizations out there around the world are having to deal with using new devices. The IoT phenomenon, IIoT, industrial IoT, is coming on board, Industry 4.0. Everything is being connected today. And as such, the cyber criminals, the threat actors out there, are seeing a much bigger attack surface. They're seeing more victims that they can take advantage of. And so the need for cybersecurity is bigger ever, today than ever have been before.
And we certainly have to be as agile as they are in recognizing that attack surface. As an educator here in cybersecurity at SecureSet, we train folks in sort of a boot camp model to get them ready for entry-level positions in cybersecurity. You mentioned something in terms of your background and your path to having once been the education manager at Trend Micro. Can you talk about that position, some of the challenges and successes there?
Yeah, we're going to have a challenge in the next couple of years just because there's not enough people to deal with cybersecurity. And what we were trying to do back in the day, this is probably 10 years ago at Trend Micro, it was really more educating our customers about our products. So I built a team of educators that went out and either did classroom-based training on our products, or we had, at the time, we started to get into e-learning modules, and so we had a whole e-learning program set up. We had online instructors that would take students through, you know, installing our products, working with our products, administering our products, et cetera. So it was very helpful. We continue to do that today. We think education is big. The area that we have been really promoting a lot about is educating the end users about the different types of threats that are affecting them, especially like phishing and spear phishing. So you're seeing today a lot of organizations doing using applications that can actually test and run a spear phishing campaign against their employees, and then it will pop up a message explaining, you know, hey, you shouldn't have clicked on this because of these reasons. So trying to help educate the end users on why this threat could have targeted them. And so that's huge. And I think it's good to hear that your organization is starting to build better curriculums around cybersecurity. We need more people in that space. You know, for me personally, and I think a lot of people who are in cybersecurity today, all learned it outside of the classroom, right? There was no classroom teaching us cybersecurity back in the day.
Definitely.
So, you know, that it's been a challenge. And I think a lot of people, and I, you know, the good news is as students that are out there, you may be in a different discipline. It doesn't really matter if you have an excitement about technology, excitement about security, you can get into the field and just adopt it. It's really just takes some initiative.
Well, that's clearly a riveting approach, and we'll get back into that in just a moment after we spend some time with our sponsor.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
Hello, this is Abe Thompson. I'm back with New Cyber Frontier and our guest, Mr. John Clay of Trend Micro. John, you had really intrigued me when you talked about the test that can be done against employees in terms of testing them on their strength against a phishing campaign and sending them an actual link to see how well they do. Can you talk more about how that was received by the folks at large?
Yeah, I think we're seeing the success of that. A lot of organizations are identifying that when they do put a program like this together and they start putting these emails out and educating their end users about it, they see a diminished number of compromises from phishing emails. So we use it internally at Trend Micro on a regular basis with our employees. We've got 6,500 employees now around the world. And we all are regularly being tested by our IT staff with these phishing emails that come in. And again, it's an education process. So if I can identify a phishing email and I don't click on it, I get a good score. If I do click on it, perhaps, whether it's an attachment or an embedded URL, and I open the email, I will get a little pop-up that explains to me why I shouldn't have. Maybe a link to a video that explains, you know, this is what phishing is, this is what usually you're going to see, how you're going to see it come in, who's it going to be addressed to, et cetera. So I think a lot of organizations are starting to look at educating their end users in cybersecurity, on security, is really showing a benefit for them. Because if you think about it, the threat actors today predominantly will target the employee because it's the easiest way into an organization to compromise their network.
Sure.
Once they get compromised, then they will laterally move to the more valuable areas of the network, like the data center, where all the valuable content, a lot of the data is going to be stored. But that initial infection into the organization almost all the time is going to target an employee.
Well, not much. Go ahead.
No, I say, and usually it's not going to be the tech savvy, the security savvy people. It's going to be people in the shipping and receiving business area of the business, right? You see a lot of turnover there, and maybe your cybersecurity program inside your organization doesn't constantly add, you know, educate them and new employees as much as you should be. So they're going to target those employees that are very that just don't have a good knowledge of technology or not a knowledge of cybersecurity. So you definitely have to look at broadening who you are educating inside your organization and make sure that as soon as somebody comes on, a new employee comes on, they are immediately trained on it because that's who the criminals are going to target.
Well, I'd certainly much rather have my employees learn in that pseudo-safe environment than the hard way, of course. So, exactly, that has its merits. And so moving on, having been that sales engineer and the education manager, then you got into that marketing role. And in that marketing role, you kind of carry this, not only you carry forward the mission of your organization, but you've got passion attached to that. And certainly in cybersecurity, we have a multitude of issues and problems. And so from your perspective, if you were to pick maybe one of the top or one or two of the top issues that cause you to lose sleep at night, what might one or two of those be?
Yeah, I think if you look back in 2017 with the WannaCry or the Petya, not Petya, the Equifax hack that occurred, and then most recently with the Meltdown and Spectre one with the Intel chips, the biggest thing that we're seeing today is the trying to deal with vulnerabilities that are disclosed and then patching those vulnerabilities on a timely basis. The threat actors today, whenever a new vulnerability is disclosed, will very quickly adopt it and create an exploit out of it and then use that exploit to get into an organization who may have not patched as quickly as possible.
Right.
WannaCry with the WannaCry one that they used, the Eternal Blue vulnerability that was disclosed by the shadow brokers, they adopted that pretty quickly, although there was a patch available a month, 2 months, 3 months even before they unleashed that WannaCry attack. And so organizations absolutely have to look at their patch management capabilities and improve that. But I think a lot of organizations don't realize that there's other technologies like an IPS or an IDS where you have virtual patching capabilities. So you can virtually patch that vulnerability before you have to adopt the full patch from the vendor. And that can really minimize that window of opportunity the threat actors have from the time it's disclosed to when an exploit is created to when the organization has finally patched its systems. The other challenge we saw with WannaCry and Petya was a lot of the older operating systems that are still very much in use. There's a lot of XP still being used around the world, especially the embedded operating systems for some of these devices like ATMs and medical devices that we saw get infected with the WannaCry ransomware. Those you don't have patches for anymore. So that's a challenge where virtual patching will come into play very well to protect an organization. Network IPS, where you can look at the traffic coming over the network layer and identify if there's an exploit being trying to be used through the network layer and can block it.
Sure.
So that area is critical.
And you're gonna certainly really wear upon the patience of your stakeholders if you're continuing to miss patches like so many did with WannaCry that were out there. But then, yeah, the flip side is that we're basically producing a running list of things for the bad guys to exploit. How do we address that? How do we do subscription service? I mean, what do we do to get out in front of that?
Yeah, you know, there's a couple of things we can obviously do. I think, again, virtual patching using IPS, whether it's host-based IPS or network-based IPS. The other area that I think is showing very good promise is app control, application control, where if I can lock down the operating system and the applications that are running on those devices and not allow any other application file to be installed on those devices, that will go far, because then you're immediately not allowing anything new to get on there that's not approved. And,
sure.
And obviously a ransomware or some other exploit's not going to be approved. So that technology, I think, is getting much better. In the past, the challenge was is a lot of organizations felt that, you know, with like a your normal PC or your servers, it was too much of a volatile environment, and you couldn't use app control. But app control today, the newer generational of app control technologies, I think is improving much better. The other area that is improving is in the machine learning or artificial intelligence, the use of that technology to identify the new threats that are coming in. That is being applied at all the different layers. And in fact, Trend Micro, we have about 20 different products that are using artificial intelligence or machine learning, whether it's for spam, whether it's for exploits, whether it's for files. It could be for social media accounts that are being used by the criminals. Lots of applications that can be using this new, it's not really new technology. Machine learning's been around for many, many years. In fact, we started in 2005 using it for spam. But it's gotten much better. And
sure.
I think a lot of organizations need to look at their existing security controls and identifying, are they using the latest and greatest stuff? Have they applied the latest technologies in those areas to make sure that they're protecting against the latest threats?
And let's continue that conversation a bit on app controls in just a moment after we hear from our sponsor.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Over 3 million data breaches happen every single day. That's over 2,000 records being compromised every minute. So often, we focus on securing web data access. But what if the attackers are already inside, having gained direct access to your storage through data management software? When it comes to communications that go directly into your storage devices, make SNIA your first line of protection. SNIA's conformance testing limits outdated communications that are known to be used by attackers. It works continuously behind the background to make sure your storage is protected. To find out if your data is truly secure, visit our website at www.snia.org/cybertest.
Hello, this is Abe Thompson back with New Cyber Frontier, podcasting from the SecureSec campus here in Colorado Springs. Our guest today is John Clay from Trend Micro. John, we were just talking about sort of some things that can be implemented to mitigate the constant scourge of vulnerabilities. And you talk about application control technology improving. And in reality, even today, you know, the basic principle of application control is available through technologies that already exist on a lot of systems, correct?
Yeah, it certainly does. I mean, you can lock down the system, you can lock down controls. I think a lot of administrators need to look at, do all of my employees need administrative control on their systems?
Right.
Most don't, right? So there's, you know, looking at ways that you can lock organizations or lock the criminals out of these systems in a much better fashion.
Right.
Credential stealing is a big piece of the toolkit within the threat actor community. So they want to steal credentials, especially of your administrators. So, you know, looking at two-factor authentication capabilities, looking at other technologies that are out there to protect. Again, you know, my industry, the cybersecurity industry, from when I started back in 1996 to now, has changed dramatically. You know, one of the things our CEO, Eva Chen, has always told us is our competitors are not, the traditional competitors you think. Our competitor is the threat actor, the hacker out there. That's who we are competing against on a regular basis. So we need to look at ways that we can innovate new technologies, new capabilities, new solutions to protect our customers today and in the future.
Well, I love the way Eva put that, because that really speaks to a passion of mine, and I'm certain that our regular host Chris would also agree, that idea of approaching some of these things as a cybersecurity community rather than considering one another, you know, the traditional competitor that must be done away with, but how do we do this together? Because there's plenty of work to go around. And how do we address this as a cybersecurity community to address the true competitor, which is, as you said, those threat actors and vulnerabilities?
Yeah, it's a tough situation today because, as you know, the world has shrunk very dramatically, right? Technology is allowing us to communicate with people that we never were able to communicate in the past with, right? Organizations can now do business with individuals and businesses all over the world because technology has come into play, right? We all are connected. And one of the things that we've been working on with a company called HITRUST in the healthcare community is an improved way to share threat intelligence and automating the process of sharing threat intelligence. And so we've done some work, initial work with them and a number of the big healthcare communities in the United States, where we are now able to share IOCs or indicators of compromise within minutes versus and traditionally they were only able to share those within weeks. So we've cut that time down of sharing an IOC with the other community members in the healthcare community very dramatically, and it's allowed them to actually look at threats that are affecting the healthcare industry alone, right? So you have threats because the threat actors aren't going to be indiscriminate. They're going to be very discriminate. They're going to look at how can I target this healthcare organization, not how can I target this entire organization, industry.
Right.
The threats today are very isolated and targeted, and so you need to have intelligence coming from those industries within those industries, and even inside the industry. You may have a different attack going against a hospital versus a doctor's office, for example. So, or a insurance organization that works in healthcare. So, it has to be pretty good. And so, I think that model we're going to see more and more of around the world. The other piece, obviously, is like in the States with the ISACs, where you have these groups that come together in the industry, different industries, and they share intelligence. And I think that model is going to improve. It needs to get more automated, and it needs to be spread not only just in the U.S., but we need to spread that out around the world because, like I said, everything now, everybody is connected around the world. So, just sticking with the healthcare, right? A doctor in the U.S. may want to consult a doctor in Canada here, for example, where I'm at today. I'm in Vancouver. And they'd be able to communicate very quickly, but, there might be some challenges because it's between two different countries. We need to solve that problem as well.
Sure, and, what you speak about is certainly something that has a great history from, my background in military and in intelligence. This concept of tailored intelligence products, finding the right feeds, one, and then finding how to tailor those products the best to meet those individual specifications you talk about. And then, yes, continuing on with your reference to essentially telemedicine, right? And the need for that communication to be clear, uninterrupted, and certainly available.
Go ahead. I think one of the big challenges in the area that you're starting to see improve, especially around with artificial intelligence and machine learning, is if you think about today, a very large organization is going to have thousands and thousands of alerts coming from their different technologies, the security products that they've got implemented.
Right.
And they don't know which one is critical, which one is not critical, right? So you're starting to see that coming into play as well. So being able to deliver an alert, but also deliver context about the alert. Is this alert a critical issue inside my network, or is it just some noise that came from a script kiddie who's trying to target just for fun our organization, right? Versus maybe a nation state actor who is targeting us. You need to be able to differentiate that risk level.
Well, and hopefully the machines aren't listening, but what that tells me is there's still a place for us human beings for a while. in terms of context
and
granularity.
No question about it. I think the skill shortage that we talked about earlier will be solved somewhat with automation, but you still are going to have that human element, because machine learning and artificial intelligence can't take care of everything. So you're still going to have humans that look at that. And that's why we have all these threat researchers on staff, because we can't automate everything. We've automated a ton of our file detections, but there's stuff that still comes in where you have to have an analyst that has to be able to rip it apart to better understand it and how it's working.
Sure. There was another area, John, that you brought up as a pretty significant threat vector, and it remains a significant threat vector. Talk to me about why we still have trouble with email vulnerabilities.
Yeah, well, email, is still a critical tool for communicating with organizations and people, right? In business, email is still probably the number one communication tool between employees and between organizations around the world. And the threat actors realize that. And so they still use email as the number one way to get into an organization. So they will craft a socially engineered email, send it to an employee that will, and the email message will be socially engineered to get that person to either click on an embedded link or to open an attached file that's associated with that email. And because it's such a big tool, a lot of employees are dealing with, potentially hundreds of emails on a regular basis every day. And, you come in from work, and if you're a multinational organization, you've got emails stacked up from overnight, and you're just trying to get through those to get into, to get to more important things in your day, and you're probably not taking a lot of time to read through them, analyze these emails, and that's what the actors are looking for. They're hoping that you will just take a look at it real quick, click on it, here's a invoice, I got to click on this invoice, boom, and the invoice, unfortunately, is a ransomware that then affects the system, or it's a keylogger, it's something that gets me, a rat, remote access tool that gets me into that system. So email is still a big, big challenge. Ransomware, for example, you're probably looking at anywhere from, I would say, 70 to 90% of the ransomware that is out there today is done through email.
Yeah.
And so organizations have to relook at their messaging security products that they're using, because in the past they utilized anti-spam, and for spam it's a great the anti-spam products do a great job. They probably 99, even could be up to 100% of the time they're going to block a spam message. These are not spam messages I'm talking about. These are socially engineered phishing or spear phishing emails that are crafted to look like a normal email.
Yeah.
And so a lot of the spam products, anti-spam products today, miss those. So you have to look at that. But that's the best place to block a threat today, is at the gateway, at the message layer. So if an email is coming in, a bad email is coming in, block it there. Why do I want to wait until it gets to the endpoint where I potentially, I'm going to use resources to scan it at the endpoint, which are resources that the employee should be using, that system should be using for employee stuff. I've always talked about, the best line of defense is that first line of defense is block it at its source, the
sure.
email, the web. That's where you want to initially look at adding your protection.
And until you can guarantee that every single employee is at the same level of urgency and awareness, that remains an unfortunate vulnerability place. And it's interesting, technology was always supposed to be our friend, and then we get to the point where we're at information overload, such that we're easily exploited because there is just so much out there to sift through that we make that casual error clicking on that errant link. You make it quite easy to understand why the vulnerability still exists and is so readily exploited by adversaries out there.
Yep. And they're getting very good at it. I mean, with business email compromise, which is a threat that we've been seeing build over the last couple of years, and the FBI's even published, I think we're up to about, over $5 billion dollars that have been lost in business email compromise scams. And it's a very simple attack. It's simply an email that's crafted and sent to a financial person in the organization, purportedly coming from the CEO or CFO, that just says, hey, wire transfer X amount of money to this account for me. I'm out of the office, so, you know, and my cell's not working, so let's keep it in an email thread. So if I hit reply, it goes to the criminal, and you can. And we've even seen where there's conversations back and forth between the employee and the criminal to build that trust level. And that, you know, that doesn't even have a payload. There's no attachment. There's no embedded link. It's just trying to get a person to do something that they do on a regular basis, but to do it to the criminal's account, not
yeah, absolutely. A legitimate account. You know, it's no longer the crown prince over in Africa that's offering you money.
No.
You know, a little bit more sophisticated.
Funny you say that though, Abe. This is the next generation of threat that we're seeing coming out of West Africa.
Yeah,
so
particularly
the threat actors West Africa are getting very good at doing business email compromise threats, and so we published actually a report that was with Interpol on the West Africa cyber criminal underground, and it's a pretty fascinating look at it. And in fact, Interpol did a survey of law enforcement agencies in West Africa, and we got a really good profile of who these actors are, how they worked, who they work together with, and the types of scams that they're using today.
Well, and that's key. You know, one of the first questions I would have. I'd be intrigued about. You know, are they unifying? Is there a pooling of resources, et cetera, et cetera? So that sounds very interesting.
And there is. I mean, there's certainly they work together. There's two types over there. But you know, if you think about the criminal underground, one of the challenges we have as a world is, you know, there's a lot of places in this world where people don't make a lot of money. And if I can get a computer and get access to the internet, I can basically buy any kind of malware, any kind of threat, even full kits that give me soup to nuts an attack scenario to an organization. And I don't have to make a lot of money to have a good living.
Sure.
I can, you know, if I make $25,000 in some places of the world, that's a fortune.
You're set.
So that's part of the challenge we have with the threat actors side of the house, right? We have people going to school to become cybersecurity experts, but you also have even tutorials available in the underground that can teach people to become a cyber criminal. And it doesn't take a lot of money, and the profit amount out there is pretty high. So we're gonna continue to see the growth in the threat actor side grow pretty dramatically over the next several years, and that's gonna be a challenge for everybody.
Certainly. Well, ladies and gentlemen, our guest today has been Mr. John Clay, who's the marketing manager at Trend Micro, celebrating their 30th year as a cybersecurity company. John, it's been a great pleasure. So much to talk about. So many other places we can go. We hope maybe we can have a future conversation with you. But we do thank you for joining us on this episode of New Cyber Frontier.
You bet, Abe. It's been my pleasure, and I do look forward to coming back in the future. I'd love to continue our conversation.
Indeed. Well, thank you very much. This is Abe Thompson podcasting from the SecureSec campus here in Colorado Springs on New Cyber Frontier.
The views or opinions expressed during this podcast are not those of Colorado Technical University.
You have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.